Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Hello and welcome to Unbelievable. It's me, Justin Brierley, with you for the show that brings you conversations that matter between Christians and non-Christians, and a very interesting discussion we've got for you on whether the Nordic countries, the Scandinavian countries, are a secular paradise on today's show. But what a beginning it's been to 2021, eh? First of all, here in the UK, Boris Johnson announces another lockdown. Coronavirus running rife, sadly, due to a new strain of the virus that's more transmissible than before. And then to top it off, chaos in the capital in the US as the Trump rioters went into Congress. And that was all over our TV screens, wasn't it? I've seen a few memes going around, something along the lines of, I've tried my 7-day free trial of 2021 and I want to send it back. But anyway, I think we're stuck with it. Let's hope the rest of 2021 starts to look a bit brighter. We will be trying to cover some of what's been going on in the US on next week's show. I was trying to actually bring that together for this weekend, but couldn't quite make it happen. So I'll update you on that a little later on in the show. Thanks, by the way, for everyone who suggested topics and shows for this coming year. I put that out on our social media asking for your suggestions. Many, many suggestions. I'll bring some of them again a little later on in the show. We've also been blogging hard over the Christmas and New Year break. I put out a blog on the top 10 shows of 2020. I'll tell you what they were later on. And on Jordan Peterson's return as well. And of course, the Capitol Hill riots just this last week. So if you want to check those out, check out our blog at Pathios. And exciting news on the TikTok front as well. Finally got round to creating my own TikTok channel, actually, Justin.Brierley. And I've just been uploading 3 videos so far at the behest of my 16-year-old son. Just 60-second sort of apologetic explanations of, you know, arguments for God and that kind of thing. Was not expecting the response it's had. The latest video, the third video that I put out, has had 1.5 million views the last time I checked. And I'm nearing 50,000 followers already. It's very bizarre for being on TikTok for 1 week. So there you go, the brave new world of TikTok. We are going to also launch a show TikTok, an official show TikTok as well this coming year. So look out for that as well. But I'll update you on some of the fun on that front a bit later on in the show. For now, thanks for tuning in. And don't forget, you can find out more from Unbelievable at our website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable, for social media, the podcast, the book, the newsletter, and much more besides.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, today on the show, we're asking, is Scandinavia proof that godless societies do better? It's often been argued that the prosperity and welfare of Scandinavian countries such as Denmark, Norway and Sweden are proof that secular societies get on better than religious ones. Scandinavian countries frequently come out top in terms of happiness, welfare, education and health. And they've also become very post-Christian, registering some of the highest numbers of those who identify as non-religious. So is this all proof that the Nordic countries are a secular paradise, or do they owe their peace and prosperity to their once strong Christian heritage? Joining me tonight are Christian Lomsdalen, the Vice President of the Norway Humanist Association, and Stefan Gustafsson, Director for Apologia, the Center for Christian Apologetics in Sweden. Stefan and Christian, welcome along to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much. Really good to be here.
It's great to have you both. Let's start with you, Christian. You got in touch because you started listening to the show around the beginning of the lockdown period, the coronavirus. It's wonderful when we can make a show happen because a listener got in touch and said, I heard you talking about something. I think it would be an interesting discussion. And that's what we're doing. This is an issue that's come up quite often on the show, but we've never actually tackled, per se, this issue of whether the Scandinavian countries are sort of secular paradise and so on. Tell me, though, what kind of got you interested in humanism yourself? Have you used that title for a long time?
I have been using the title humanist for at least the last 12 years. The biggest step for me was to stop calling me an agnostic and start calling me an atheist. But have been calling me a humanist for the last 10, 12 years. And I've been a member of the Norwegian Humanist Association for the last 8, maybe 9 years. Who counts these days?
Well, anyway, it's great to have you on the show. We'll find out a little bit more about your background and obviously what humanism involves in Norway in particular. But also joining us is Stefan. Stefan, as I mentioned, is the director of Apologia, the Center for Christian Apologetics in Sweden. Stefan, is that something you've been involved in for a long time yourself?
Yes, I've been involved in evangelism and apologetics for a long time. I have a history in the Christian student work of IFES and also in the Evangelical Alliance. But for the last couple of years, I'm focusing on apologia. So we are engaged in public discussions about the big existential questions about God and life and meaning. And we are involved in training Christians in apologetics and in living openly with their faith and using also their minds.
Great. Well, it's great to have you both on the show for the first time. Christian, tell us what you understand of the sort of the religious history of the Scandinavian countries such as Norway, Sweden and Denmark. Obviously, they are now, you know, as I understand it, perhaps you can give us more statistics, you know, primarily non-religious in terms of people's affiliation. But obviously there has been strong, you know, Christian heritage there, hasn't there?
It has been a very long tradition with Christian heritage. But I have to correct you, because when it comes to affiliation, it is mostly still Christian-affiliated inhabitants, at least in Norway, with around 70% of the population being formerly Christians. And with that, I mean members of the Norwegian State Church.
Is that because there's a kind of an unusual thing in Norway, as I understand it, that effectively up until recently, I suppose, there was an official state church. And so
Is an official state church. They just tried to call it a different name.
Oh, OK. That's interesting. What would you, I mean, if that's the case that many people consider themselves to be members of the Church of Norway, what's the actual percentage who actually go to church and that kind of thing?
That is very difficult to sort out how many percentages of the population that actually attends church. But if you ask people, around 30% of the population says that they believe in God. And it's more or less the same percentage that are, if you sort out everyone that is not a member of the Norwegian State Church, it's more or less the same percentage. Around 34% of the members of the Norwegian State Church says that they are believing God.
Okay. What does the situation look like in Sweden? What's your view of generally the atmosphere, I suppose, when it comes to the Scandinavian and Nordic countries, Stefan?
Yes, there are some differences between Sweden and Norway. So Sweden is more secularized than Norway. Of course, membership in the Lutheran Church is still high, but that does not, for most members, it does not mean anything. It's just for historical reasons they continue to be members of the church. In terms of people's beliefs in The latest statistics I have seen, it's 64% says no to the question, does God exist? And 36 affirms. So the majority is there is no God. And that is the general mentality. And if you think of what's going on in the public and what's shaping the educational system and media. So God is to a large degree absent from the culture. So Sweden often comes in the top in terms of the most secularized countries in the world. It's we are one of the top three or something.
And would you agree that these countries, Sweden, Norway, and Denmark as well, also come out in top in terms of these other indexes of happiness, welfare, education, and health, and that kind of thing? I'll start with you, Christian, and then ask Stefan.
I would agree. That is a fact. The thing that we seem to be bad at is to do this environmentalist in an environmentalist sound way. But we seem to be doing very well on all the statistics that we like to be on top of, except
okay.
on the environmental side.
Yeah, yeah. Is that your understanding as well, Stefan, that broadly speaking, these countries do come out top?
Yeah, I do agree on a number of issues. The Scandinavian countries are really good countries to live in. And then, of course, there's a lot of problems too, because it's human beings involved. And there are problems related to the specific ways our culture is structured. So in terms of loneliness and relationships and so on, there are also some negative statistics for our country. So it's not... It's not a simple picture that everything is shiny and bright.
Yeah, I mean, I've always understood the Scandinavian countries to have, religiously speaking, they were leaders in the Reformation, and so you've had that strong sort of Reformation tradition there in the past. And obviously, you know, when I go to these places, there's still many beautiful churches and everything else, just as there is here in the UK. Are those churches largely empty now? What does that look like on the ground? What would you say, maybe Stefan, has particularly in Sweden caused this number, you know, to now say God does not exist, the 64% or whatever it is? Why has that come into view? Why has that changed so much over the years?
Yeah, so a lot of churches are, if not empty, are struggling. If you take the Lutheran Church, the former state church, 30 years ago, 1990, they had 9 million in attendance each year on the main Sunday service, 9 million. And the last year, 2019, it was 3.4. So it's going down from 9 million to 3.4 on the main Sunday service. Now, other churches are better off, but most churches are struggling. So the trend of secularization is still going on. And it's of course, a complex story. You can view it in different way. Culturally, I would say that the Scandinavian countries and Sweden, we have been homogeneous countries in terms of ethnicity, language, religion, which makes some things a little bit easier sometimes. It has created a strong unity, but also kind of concile attitude of wanting to stand together. And we have become kind of consensus cultures. And what's happening now is that we move from one consensus, the Christian consensus, to a new consensus, the secular consensus. So I think here is a slightly stronger consensus thinking in our part of the world than in some other part of the world on the continent and so on. And then I would actually say that the churches themselves have acted like grave diggers for what has happened. So for the Lutheran Church, they have for the last century used the secular university as the training for the pastors, which has secularized the church very much. And the other churches have had a lack of apologetics and using the mind. So they have been very weak in opposing a secular thinking. So I would blame quite a lot the churches for what has happened here.
That's interesting. Christian, I don't know what, yeah, you want, I think you want to come in on this as well. Please feel free.
I just wanted to comment that I think that Sweden has a stronger consensus culture than Norway has. So it's, I think it's more, it's something that we see more in Sweden than in Norway, at least from what you tell and from what I have seen in the research on, for example, religion in the classrooms in Swedish and Norwegian schools.
Is there a similar story to paint, though, I don't know, of the secularization, essentially, in Norway?
It has become a much more secular situation. And we have seen in Norway that the attendance to the churches has fallen here, too, although not as deeply as in Sweden. So there is about 5 million people that go to church every year in Norway, and they say that a large part of that is the same group of people, but at the same time, we don't have any real research into who are the people going to church.
Sure.
But at the same time, my wife attends one church and we go rather regularly. I go with her and I see mostly the same people every time. So.
Sure, sure.
I make up a chunk of this time too.
Well, I'm impressed you do go anyway, Christian. So, I mean, one thing I joked about with you before we, as we were setting up this show, Christian, is that obviously the fact that there is a Judeo-Christian heritage to Norway is emphasized just in your very name, Christian. So I guess you're aware of the way that the Christian heritage has shaped the country, even if it is obviously less and less influential now. So what's your thinking on that?
I think you're absolutely correct that it has shaped societies, but at the same time, I don't find any evidence that is this heritage that has caused the Norwegian and Swedish and then Danish societies to be as affluent and good on all these statistics today. But of course, my name is an obvious joke for, especially for Christians. The bishop of Bjørgvin makes it all the time when he sees me.
Do you often spend time with the bishop?
At least a couple of times a year.
Well, there you go. There you go. Nice. So you don't feel that particularly the Christian heritage has played much part in the prosperity and the happiness indexes and everything else that Norway and other Nordic countries claim then? You feel it's just, is it simply, I don't know, irrelevant? Could it have happened whatever the religious history of the country was?
That would be counterfactual history, so it would be really hard to know. But what you do see is that those countries that has a high rate of success on all these metrics, they have a high level of trust as well. And you also find that a lot of countries that we would not like to compare Norway to in other parts of the world that are Christian does not have the same level on all these statistics. So I find it very hard to, well, blame Norway's and Sweden's successes on Christianity. But I really am not able to say that Scandinavia is a proof either of godless societies being better.
Yes, but as far as you're concerned, I suppose you haven't seen any evidence to suggest that you have to be Christian. And obviously some of the examples you look at around the world. And this has come up as well. One show I'm thinking of, Stefan, our first big conversation, which was has been a much-watched show between atheist Susan Blackmore and Jordan Peterson. Susan Blackmore used this very argument to say, actually, you look at somewhere like America, which is a very religious country, and you see much worse performance in terms of the poverty gap that exists, incarceration rates, those kinds of things. And she said, whereas Scandinavia, largely secular countries, you see a very different story. And for her, that was evidence that secularism works, that, you know, you don't need to have be God-fearing in a country to reap the rewards. So what's your thinking on that, Stefan?
It's of course a complex issue. You cannot just point to one factor to explain a country which always have a long and complicated history. So I think one needs to look at the specific examples. And if we think of the Scandinavian countries, the basic outline is that you have the Vikings and the Norse religions of Thor and Odin and Freya, and then you have 1,000 years of Christianity, and then it moves into secularism. So all agrees on that is the kind of general trajectory. But then you can tell that story in two different ways. The popular way in Sweden is to tell the story that the real important thing happens 100 years ago, and the key words are enlightenment and rationality and liberation from religious oppression, and then you have democracy, and you have the social democrats and the welfare state. That's the kind of key elements. But I think there is another story to be told, not going back 100 years, but going back 1,000 years to the Christianization of the country and the emergent of a new view of human beings, where a new view of children, a new view of women, a new view of the law, that might is not right, but everyone is under the law, and the law is ultimately related to God. And then you have 500 years ago, the Reformation, and in our countries, Lutheran state churches, which I think was a wrong idea, but it has deeply shaped. Yeah, I can agree on that, I'm sure. But it has deeply shaped our cultures and the mentality for many hundred years. And if you take such a thing as democracy, and then you have the Reformation, and then you have the revival movements of the 18th and 19th century sweeping the countries, coming before the labor movement, coming before the social democrats. And for example, democracy is rooted in the revival movements, who demanded religious freedom, freedom to meet together, freedom of thought and expression. And the first democratic societies in Sweden were the Baptist churches, where it was one person, one vote, male and female, regardless of social status, rich and poor. So I would say that there is a lot of things in the background that created a context for what then happened during the 20th century, where the social democrats to a large degree came in and did some bad things, but in many areas did a good work and creating a lot of the things that we know as the Scandinavian countries today. But I don't think you can ignore the setup during 1,000 years and the whole mentality, for example, that we have in the revival movements. They were called läsare, that means readers. So in the revival movement, people were studying, and they were meeting in the homes to discuss the Bible and the text from the reformers and contemporary texts. That created a totally new mentality that everyone could have an opinion and form an opinion and so on, which is behind then democracy.
Christian, you wanted to come in on that.
Yes, because I do like that story. It's a nice story. And it sums up some things, and it makes it easy to see the history as one line. But at the same time, you have so many countries that has had about 500 years, 1,000 years, 1,500 years of Christian history without ever reaching that kind of society. Not to say that this is an evolutionary deterministic process that will end up here if you have long enough time. Probably it is an argument against that. But you have so many countries around the world where I would rather not live, because it's places where I would feel more insecure than I do in Scandinavia.
And give an example. I mean, which countries are you thinking of? Are you thinking specifically of countries with Christian history? Where?
Yes, I do, because I try to limit myself to them when I think about Norway's Christian history. But I have been living in Venezuela and in Honduras, and I have been living in Spain. And all of these countries are more insecure and are more are countries where I would feel less secure bringing up my children. And I would probably be less secure when it comes to physical safety as well, at least in Honduras and in Venezuela. And seeing that these countries have 500 years and almost 1,500 years of Christian history makes it difficult for this argument to prevail.
Yeah, I see your point, but two things. Firstly, as I said, it's there is more factors than just the religious life. You have to look at many other factors, and one thing that has made our history more easy is the kind of homogeneous cultures we have had compared to many other situation. And then, in terms of the religious influence. In Venezuela, you don't have the impact of the Reformation 500 years ago, and you don't have the revival movements sweeping, an evangelical revival movement sweeping the whole country and affecting actually every aspect of society as we have had in the Scandinavian countries. So I don't think it is a valid example.
But you could take a country like the UK, for example, that has had a more similar history, but has a very much greater divide between the classes, between economic groups, and has a lot bigger degrees of poverty, for example, than the Scandinavian countries.
Sure, but they are also much higher up in terms of many other factors than Venezuela, for example.
Venezuela has a lot of problems.
and then you have to look to all the other factors too, where Britain has a more glorious but also more complicated history than the small countries of Scandinavia. So I still think there is validity in looking to our Christian path, past.
I mean, we're going to go to our first break. One of the interesting things that, referencing that big conversation between Jordan Peterson and Susan Blackmore again, in response to that objection of hers, he said, well, he thinks a lot of the West is living on the corpse of its ancestors, was the phrase he used, but that won't necessarily continue forever. That needs refreshing. And I'll come back to you both for some thoughts on that in a moment's time, because we're talking today about whether Scandinavia is proof that godless societies do better. We're looking at the religious statistics in places like Sweden, Norway, and Denmark, and asking, do the relative wealth and prosperity of these countries prove that actually we're better off going secular, as in many ways these countries have. My guests today to discuss this are Stefan Gustafsson and Christian Lomsdalen, and we'll be back in just a moment's time.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Welcome back to this week's edition of the show. It's me, Justin Brierley, and joining me today are two great guests. Christian Lomsdalen is Vice President of the Norway Humanist Association, and Stefan Gustafsson is Director for Apologia, the Centre for Christian Apologetics in Sweden. And we're asking whether the Scandinavian countries are proof that godless societies do better. I've got some statistics here, gentlemen, from the World Happiness Report. And it says that from 2013 until today, every time the World Happiness Report has published its annual rankings of countries, the five Nordic countries, Finland, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and Iceland, have all been in the top 10, with Nordic countries occupying the top three spots in 2017, 2018, and 2019. And this article goes on to say clearly, when it comes to the level of average life evaluations, the Nordic states are doing something right. But Nordic exceptionalism isn't confined to citizens' happiness. It's also the state of democracy, political rights, lack of corruption, trust between citizens, safety, social cohesion, gender equality, equal distribution of incomes, and other global comparisons. So it sounds like you guys are doing really, really well, all things considered. What do you think, though? I want to ask about a comment I made earlier about it being an atheist paradise there, Christian. But before we get to that, I did mention Jordan Peterson saying, are these countries just feeding off the corpse of their ancestors? What's your take on that, Stefan? And then we'll hear from Christian.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of truth in that, even though we are secular countries now, we still are built upon the memories of a Christian path. And it's really deeply ingrained in the mentality of people. And you can think of, for example, of the Social Democrats that have played a crucial role. And they, of course, have their roots back to Karl Marx. But you can ask the question, could Karl Marx have arisen in any other culture than in a Christian culture? This whole passion for justice and the anger towards injustice is, of course, fostered by the Old Testament prophets and the words of Jesus against hypocrisy and the lack of compassion for the poor. And so much of the values of the Social Democrats are actually values that have their roots in the Christian faith. And even though those people are cut off from those roots, they still continue to have those values. But as I see it, it's a matter of time before the fruits of the Christian faith, so to speak, will start to wither and rotten, because we don't have the connection with the roots any longer. And then we will have a huge problem, because if you take the secular humanism, say man is the measure of all things, individualism, how on earth can you build a strong culture on that? If you give, we have had Christianity for 1,000 years, if you take secular humanism and gives it 1,000 years, and the basic creed is man is the measure of all things, what kind of culture will be built upon that foundation? I think that's an interesting question.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, go for it, Christian. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure I would, if I were a Christian, I do not think I would like to use that argument that Jordan Peterson used there. Because if we see that the countries that prosper the most, that has the highest qualities of living, are the ones living on the corpse of Judeo-Christian history and not the Judeo-Christian countries themselves, I will not be comfortable with that argument. That would really make my faith shaken, because it sounds really, really bad.
Which part? The
countries that are doing the most of their situation and the best countries to live in, as you stated in your statistics, Justin, those are the countries that are feeding on the corpses of Judeo-Christian history. But the countries that are Judeo-Christian are not at the same level. I would really, really not like that argument if I were Christian. But at the same time, if we see the history after the secularization has started, it has become better to live in Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and so on for all people, not just the men with incomes. If you look at the situation for the queer people, for women, for all the groups that were not so well taken care of in the more Christian times of Norway, Sweden, and Denmark, they have prospered after the decline of Christianity.
But it sounds to me as though what Stefan's point, I think, the larger point, I suppose, was that the very things you value in terms of that equality and everything else have effectively been granted by that Christian history, that didn't come out of a vacuum, in a sense, that secularization, in a sense, can only happen in a Christian sort of context. It doesn't really happen in other kinds of contexts. What's your thought on that?
But it does happen in other kinds of contexts. It happens in cultures all around the world. Of course, with Norway and Sweden and Denmark being the most secular countries, we could say that this is some kind of post-Christian thing, but we see this kind of secularization happen in other places all over the world as well. And yes, we don't know if this could have happened in a society that were not on this foundation, but at the same time, if you look at the situation for the women when Christianity was introduced to the Scandinavian countries, they fared worse. Children fared better.
I wouldn't agree on that. On the contrary, when Christianity was introduced, there were laws introduced protecting women. So Birger Jarl, who was a kind of king who founded Stockholm, where I'm sitting right now, he introduced, because of Christianity, a law that protected women from sexual harassment. And the church introduced...
And denied divorce.
Sorry?
And denied divorce.
Yeah, but the church introduced, for example, consent in marriage, that you couldn't be forced to be married, and the church forbade marriages between very close relatives. So the whole tribal system fell apart, and you can have the forming of the nation. So in terms of the protection of the weak and protection of women, it was a benefit for women that Christianity was introduced, as it was back in antiquity. That's one of historians are saying that's one of the reasons for the success of the Christian faith, that a lot of marginalized groups, slaves, handicapped people, sick people, women, who had a very low value in the eyes of the general Roman culture, they were given dignity in according to the Christian faith. And I think that has followed the Christian faith when it has been true to its own ideas, which is, of course, not always have been.
Christian.
But you cannot compare the situation for the Roman women and for the Scandinavian women at the same time, not even compared to the 500 years that happened between there, because the Norwegian, when you deny women the right to divorce, or all people the right to divorce, you make them far more vulnerable to violent partners. So to say that they gained something from Christianity, yes, they gained something, but at the same time, they lost equality in the marriage.
Of course, when we are talking about the impact of the Christian faith, there has been a lot of problems in terms of what the church have done and in terms of what Christians have done. There has been a lot of inconsistencies, and there has been a lot of evil perpetrated by Christians and in the name of Christ. That's no question about that. And I'm not defending everything that has happened in the name of Christianity, of course not.
But you won't have to with me, because I will not try to make you defend all of that. I just say that to deny people the right to divorce is leaving them more vulnerable to predatory partners. And that is today as well.
Go ahead, Stefan. Yeah.
So one can discuss a certain aspect of, for example, of marriage laws, and of course there were have been situations where those marriage laws have been destructive for an individual. But if you take the bigger picture of the view of women, the Christian faith has been an impetus to the dignity of women and the value of women, because in the Christian faith, for the first time in world history, you have this thought of male and female being created in the image of God with equal value, equal dignity, equal status before God. And in Christ, there is no nor male nor female, but you are united with the same spiritual status before God. So that's quite revolutionary aspects. So I think one has to look at the bigger picture. And then, of course, one can also look at specific issues, say, this was not applied in a good way here. Here was an individual that was really suffering and so on. But I don't think the general picture is that the Christian faith made a situation worse for women. On the contrary, it elevated the position of women.
Yeah, you've said at the outset, I suppose, there, Christian, that it's difficult to, you know, say, yes, of course, the good things that we enjoy in the Scandinavian countries are directly related to our secularism. I'm interested to know just how much you think people there actually even consider themselves secular or atheist or any particular religious label. I mean, we asked earlier on in the show, you know, is it a godless society? Is it an atheist society? I mean, is that the way people think of themselves, would you say, apart from when they're being polled, you know, to ask what their specific beliefs are?
We have some polls that suggests that like 50% of the population considers themselves to have a some kind of atheist, humanist, or something like that worldview when they are asked about it. But at the same time, it is very hard to say that. I don't think most people do not think about religion almost any time during their life. I really do not believe that. And the statistics show that the non-religious, the non-affiliated, the nuns are the group that is growing, and most people say that, well, we don't have a specific life stance. So I couldn't speak for 50% of the Norwegian population, even if I wanted to.
I've got an independent article here, which is from 2016. And it says the number of Norwegians who say they do not believe in God has reached an all-time record and eclipsed those who do believe for the first time ever. This was in 2016.
That's correct.
And those replying no or don't know to the question, do you believe in God, comfortably outweighs those who say yes now. But I was fascinated to learn sort of the history, really, of the Norwegian church in particular, in that, again, according to another source I looked up, citizens born in Norway to one or two Norwegian parents are automatically added to the list of Protestant Christians in Norway and are required to sign out of the church. So it's almost as though you're automatically added in and you have to leave rather than. And whereas in the UK, obviously, there is still a state church, the Anglican Church, and we have bishops in the House of Lords, which obviously the humanists here and the secular society want to see gone. There isn't in that sense, people still have to choose to be a member of the Church of England and to, had to make a conscious decision to have a child baptized into that church and so on. That seems less the way it is in Norway, interestingly.
Well, yes, I have to update the article because in Norway, that happened until October 2018, which is, interestingly enough, almost 2 years after the politicians said that the church and the state were separated.
Okay.
And as a political scientist, I would not say that the church and state in Norway is separated, because there is we have one church that is mentioned in the constitution, and that is the Norwegian church, the Folkekirke. Political science, according to political science, we still have a state church. We just don't like to call it that anymore. But people do not get automatically enrolled into the church anymore.
Okay, right. Well, that's an important difference, obviously, since 2018. What about Norwegian citizens' tax funds are given to the Protestant church until one registers as a member of another religious group? So did that change as well in 2018?
That is an unclear formulation of that, how the rule was. The state church gets money according to their wishes and budgets and the politicians, how much they like the church. And then they divide that number by the members of the church, and we get that sum for each of our members.
Okay. Now, this is fascinating to me because it's so different to the UK, and I'm sure many other countries. Every country has its own history of how it came to its particular way of doing the sums and the way that the churches are related to the state. And I guess Sweden, again, is a different case again, Stefan, for you. I mean, you've kind of said, though, you're not convinced of the value, in a sense, of the way the state has been allied to the church historically in these countries, and obviously you feel actually the church has done a pretty bad job, poor job of actually Christianizing the countries that they have been part of, Stefan. So do you want to just talk into that a little bit?
Yeah, let me first make a comment on what Christian said earlier on countries without the Christian history having a lot of the good fruits we have in the Scandinavian countries. For me, here is a huge irony that if you look historically, universities and science arose out of the Christian faith or was inspired by Christian faith. Healthcare and compassion for the sick and vulnerable was inspired by the Christian faith. Democracy and human rights were grounded in the Christian faith. And of course, those good things have then been, you can say, exported and inspired in other countries without the Christian history. And the ironic thing is that simultaneously, as we have applied them in many areas very well in the Scandinavian countries, all those fruits of the Christian faith, we have cut ourselves off from the roots of it. And I'm not sure it will last in our countries. I think, for example, you mentioned trust, which is a key thing. I would say we have a growing problem with the welfare system in Sweden, which is built upon trust and honesty, fostered by hundreds of years of people being educated through the Lutheran catechism and really viewing themselves living with God as an audience for their life. And you didn't need to have that strong control mechanisms because the majority of the people wouldn't make a wrong use of the welfare system. And that is gradually changing now. And people are using the system not according to its intention, but in a very selfish way. And you have to add control system after control system. And I think the welfare system will not in the long run work because the trust and honesty will.
And you link just, and I will come to you in just a moment, Christian, but you link specifically, do you, Stefan, that the trust that has been there, the capital of that trust, to the Christian heritage, and you see that ebbing away as the society becomes more secularized?
Yeah, I think that is one factor, absolutely.
I can see you want to come in on that, Christian, yes.
Yes, I would. But first, I would like to comment that we find compassion with weak and hurt and dying members of the tribes already with the Neanderthals, way before Christianity. So I'm not sure if we could blame that on Christianity. But that being said, at the same time, we have the decline in trust in our countries. That being said, it's not really sure if we have a decline in trust because it goes up and down, and we have seen a surge during the last 5 to 10 years in trust in the Scandinavian countries. But the thing we also have had in the last 20, 30, 40 years in both our countries is the rise of the political right. Not as the right when we speak about like Trump or any parties on the that far side of the spectrum, but a more capitalist politics has been introduced to the Scandinavian countries as well in that same period that you tell. Although these parties being more Christian or at least openly Christian than other parties, at least in Norway, they tend to have a politics that is more on control and less on trust. So I'm not sure if we could say that the added control systems in the welfare state is due to secularization. I would say that it is due to a change in politics and not secularization.
Let me just say that compassion within the tribe is not what has marked the Scandinavian countries. It's compassionate regardless if it's your family, your clan, your tribe. It's a compassionate a compassion because it's a human being. And that is the unique thing with the Christian faith, that even the foreigner is created in the image of God and have the same status as I have. So I totally agree. Compassion within the tribe you can find in every culture. But the unique thing here is that you have a compassion because it's a human being, not because it's my tribe or my family or my friend or someone I know, but because it's a human being. So I think that is the big difference here. You asked me about the state church. The state church is not the concept of original Christianity. So I think it was a wrong decision. And I'm glad that Sweden have separated formally state and church. And I think one, you can give an argument that for Sweden, the state church system is part of the secularization process. And it has been bad for the churches. The churches should have been free from the beginning, and people would have been given the gospel as an offer to freely accept or freely reject, and not being forced upon people from above, from the authorities and from the structure of the state and so on. So that was a big mistake. But of course, since it was a state church, it had a huge impact on the culture. No one can deny that in terms of values and mentalities in a number of areas.
It's sort of two sides of the coin, I suppose, isn't it? And I remember when one former guest on this show talked about the fact that the problem with having, for instance, religion in schools, you know, schools that are church schools and so on, is that very often what it gives, it gives you just enough religion to inoculate you against the real thing, like a vaccine, you know. And this makes me laugh because I think actually maybe there's something to that you can almost grow up in a quote unquote Christian society and think, well, this is what Christianity is. But it may be a very cultural form of Christianity, which really doesn't do justice to the real value of the Gospels. And in a way, I can see you're kind of probably in agreement on this, Christian, that you are no fan of the linking of the state and the church either. And you'd rather they went their separate ways in that way.
Yes, I'm a big supporter of church freedom of faith.
There you go. And I guess everyone having to make their own, you know, claim in the marketplace. I guess the comeback sometimes to this, Stefan, is, but there's no such thing as just a neutral, you know, space, you know, and if secularism is at the core of it, then that's what, then there, a certain view of life is going to be taught in the schools and in the culture and everything. It's Christian, you want to come back and then we'll come back. Yeah. What do you say to that? Yeah.
Yes, because humanists and atheists rarely want a neutral space in society. This is a very often said myth in the Norwegian political system. We want the society to be able to choose whichever religion, faith, life stance that each individual want to, well, claim to have. And the state should not meddle in this part and not be setting the favoritize any religion, life stance, or any other. I do not want to be favoritized by the Norwegian state. I really don't. But in schools, we should teach common values like the human rights and others. And I know Stefan would claim that they are Christian, but that is okay. I can live with that.
Yeah, I mean, what do you say to that, Stefan? Because in a way, you know, do you think that, you know, very often I've met secularists, sometimes Christians, who are believe in secularism as a way of conducting society so that everyone has, you know, an equal right to their beliefs, but no belief is forced on any particular person. But at the same time, others say, no, that secularism is just a way in which a certain type of materialist worldview, atheistic worldview, is actually being pushed in society.
Yeah, I think we need to define what we mean here. So I agree that we should have a secular state, where secular means not taking a stand on which religion or worldview or philosophy that is the ultimate truth. But we should not have a secular society, but we should have an open and free and therefore pluralistic society where people have the freedom to choose their own way of life and their own thinking, and where we have open debates about what is truth, where can we find truth, and so on. Is that possible? Of course, on the state level, we need to unite on certain basic values, certain basic assumptions. But that does not mean that we have to say yes to a whole worldview together, and in that sense have a state religion. The problem in Sweden is that a lot of secular people, they think that secularism, meaning there is no God and this world is the only thing there is, that that is a neutral position, and every religious position is something added, something which is not neutral. So for me, it has often been important to try to show that secularism, in that sense of denying God and the spiritual reality, is a worldview on its own. It's parallel to a religion.
Christian, we'll come back to you. We're just pushing up against our final break, and we'll see what you have to say. We're talking about whether the Nordic countries are a secular paradise. Do they prove that godless societies do better? We'll conclude our discussion in just a moment's time. Welcome back to the final part of this week's edition of the show. We'll be concluding our debate on Scandinavian countries. Are they a godless paradise? In a short moment's time. Next week on the programme, as I mentioned earlier, we'll be turning to the American church and politics. Obviously, we've all seen the scenes of the Trump rioters storming Congress this past week. We're going to be asking, is the American church in the grip of political idolatry? I'll have some special guests joining me for that show, but I can't tell you exactly who they are right now, but we're lining that one up. And obviously, with Joe Biden due to be sworn in very soon, I'm sure there's going to be more controversy and more issues on that front for some time to come. Anyway, that's what you can look forward to at the same time next week. If you can stay here on Premier Christian Radio at 8 p.m. tonight on The Profile, Sir Cliff Richard, no less, will be interviewed by Cindy Kent. And he is, of course, the legend in his own lifetime, the singer, songwriter, performer. And he's also the cover star of this month's Premier Christianity magazine. So he's going to be talking, of course, about the false allegations that he had to contend with for a few years, and how he's bounced back from that, and about his faith in all of that. Also, Heidi Krauter, who has Down syndrome, talks to Cara Bentley about campaigning against the abortion of babies with disabilities, another important conversation as part of The Profile. That's also available on its own Profile podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from. Got a lot of feedback, some lovely messages you've left me over the Christmas and New Year period as well. Results from the survey that we did of our Christmas debate on the historicity of the birth narratives. I'll tell you what the results were on that. We did a little survey on that. And the top 10 shows from 2020. Want to know what they were? The most popular shows of Unbelievable? Stay tuned and you'll find out.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, we've been hearing in the show today just how great it is to live in places like Norway and Sweden. If I could do any traveling at the moment, which we can't because we're in the middle of a pandemic, I would certainly make my next destination somewhere like Stockholm or somewhere in Norway.
You're welcome.
Here as well.
Well, thank you very much. Christian and Stefan have been my guests on the show today. If you want to find out more about them, you could look up the Norway Humanist Association. That's human.no. Stefan has a website at stefangustafsson.se, or you look for the Apologia website that he's director of as well. I'll make sure there are links from today's show to both of you gentlemen so that people can find out more. You run some podcasts as well, I think, don't you, Christian? Where should people go? What should they be looking for if they're looking on their podcast for you?
If they can understand Norwegian, they can go and search up Lektor Lomsdalens Innfall on Spotify or wherever else, and they will find my school-based podcast. And okay. I have a humanist podcast. That's tanketrigger.no.
Do you run any podcasts yourself, Stefan, as well?
Yes, we have Apologia Podden. So my co-worker Martin and I, we have a podcast together for Apologia.
And it's a very nice podcast.
Oh, thank you.
There you go. If only we had, you know, the same thing that we now have for text with Google, where you can just auto-translate a website. We need something like that for podcasts, don't we, where I can listen to one in Scandinavian or Norwegian or whatever and be able to enjoy it, even though I can't speak the language. Anyway, just in that last section, it looked like you wanted to come back on something, Christian, because obviously... Stefan had been making the point again that he thinks there's a lot of what society, you know, the society has is has come down because of Christianity and so on. But what did you want to say in response to those last points?
I just wanted to read a quote from the Norwegian law of education, because I think that what Stefan said is really important. And I really like this bit of the Norwegian law of education. Education and training must be based on values in Christian and humanist heritage and traditions, such as respect for human dignity and nature, on intellectual freedom, charity, forgiveness, equality, and solidarity, values that also appear in different religions and beliefs and are rooted in human rights. And I think it's very beautiful. It makes me love my work.
Yes.
Good formulations, but it raises the question, the end of it, rooted in human rights. So then, where are human rights rooted? I recently read Noah Harari's book, Sapiens, and he, of course, very clear that there is no rights in biology.
Yes, and his definition on humanism has been widely criticized.
Yeah, but still, I think he has a really good point that all those things that we are discussing here, you don't find a basis for them in biology. And if there is no God and biology and physics and chemistry is kind of ultimate reality, then all these good things are hanging in the air. And I was thinking of this analogy of Jordan Peterson of the corpse, and you said you wouldn't use that argument. And of course, it's I don't think it's a good thing living out of a corpse. But the point of Jordan Peterson is those ideas will die eventually. If we are disconnected with the roots, and in my view, those good values will be strengthened if we have a return of belief in God and in Christianity. And if we don't have it, it will not only be a dead corpse; these ideas will die. I like a quote from Nietzsche, because I think he saw this very clearly. He talks about what he thinks is a crazy concept, namely the equality of souls before God, which is the basis, according to him, for all thoughts about equality and equal rights. So he saw that if you take away God, you don't have all those rights. And of course, he looked for the Übermensch, not the equality of all human beings, but the Übermensch. So for me, we are back to this. Where do we, what is the foundation for all those good values that still are cherished in the Scandinavian countries? But we don't have a real foundation for them. And unfortunately, most people do not ask those intellectual, philosophical, bigger questions. They just feel in their hearts, oh, these are really good values. But they don't ask the more foundational questions. Where do these values come from? Not only historically, what's their roots, but kind of metaphysically, ontologically, where are they grounded? And historically, they've been said to be grounded in God. If they are not, do they have a foundation at all?
Final thoughts as you respond to that, if that's all right, Christian, then we'll wind things up.
I'm not sure if I would call that something is founded in the idea of God, that makes something founded or grounded in something. I would not agree with that. And I'm happy to acknowledge that we have to fight for rights of the humans, of animals, of the world, the nature, and to fight for all that we have every day. And we cannot stop fighting for the rights, for the how we should think that the world should be structured. And we have to do that every day for a foreseeable future. Because I really cannot see any objective foundation for really anything other than that I live here and now.
Final thoughts.
Of course, the foundation is not an idea. That's not a good foundation. So the whole question is if there is a God, a real God, who is actually there, then you have a foundation. So it's not only an idea.
We will have to start to draw it to a close there. Thank you so much both for being on the show today. It's been really interesting to be able to sort of take, you know, something and look at it from your particular perspectives, you know, with the particular cultural histories you have in the countries you live in, and to hear that. So thank you very much for both contributing to today's show. Again, if you want to find out more, I'll make sure there are links to both my guests, Christian and Stefan, with today's podcast and on the YouTube video as well. But for the moment, thank you very much for joining me on the show.
Thank you.
Look forward to hearing your thoughts on today's show. Email me unbelievable@premier.org.uk, or you can get in touch via our social media. It's Twitter @unbelievablejb. For Facebook, just look for the Unbelievable show page. And of course, you can find all of the social media from our webpage, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. And we'll get to some of your feedback and your greetings as well over the Christmas period in a moment's time. TikTok is a new place you can find me as well. Just my own personal account at justin.briley. And as I mentioned earlier, I went in not really knowing what I was doing. Fortunately, I have a 16-year-old son, Noah, who is already a TikTok professional. And so he taught me how to do this thing. 60-second sort of apologetic sort of thoughts, really, is what I've been offering, often with a some kind of a prop, a ping pong ball, a dice, a set of blocks. And yeah, I was not expecting the response. The account has, to use my son's terminology, blown up. So heading towards 50,000 followers at the time of recording, and the most popular video on there being a sort of just a simple case for why I believe God doesn't need a creator, using some stacking blocks. And that's, believe it or not, had 1.5 million views. So there you go. If you want to check that out, it's justin.briley on TikTok. But as I said, we'll be aiming to launch some material from the show itself on a show account for TikTok in the near future as well. If you want more from the show, by the way, don't forget we're doing these classic replays, midweek classic replays on the podcast each week. And the latest show from the archives is with a Buddhist guest, so you might want to check out that latest one. And the top 10 shows of 2020, we counted these down on our Pathos blog, from 10 to number 1. And this was aggregated from both YouTube and the podcast stats. Number 10, the critical race theory episode, where Neil Shenvey and Razzle Berry debated that. Atonement and the Cross with Greg Boyd and William Lane Craig was at number 9. That John Lennox, that Ask Anything with John Lennox on artificial intelligence and atheism, among other subjects, came in at number 8. From earlier in the year, Brandon Robertson and David Bennett, Side A and B, Gay Christians Debating, was also popular. That came in number 7. Number 6 was right at the beginning of last year, the very first show of 2020, Douglas Murray on being a Christian atheist. He was in conversation with Esther O'Reilly. At number 5, Cosmic Skeptic and Max Baker Hitch debating the argument from reason. Number 4 was How Did Life Begin? Jim Tor and Lee Cronin doing that scientific debate. And of course, at number 3, the Great Big Trump Debate, Eric Metaxas and David French, which we hosted courtesy of John Brown University's Center for Faith and Flourishing. That was a very, very popular show, both on YouTube and on podcast. At number 2, our second most popular video and podcast of 2020, and this was actually my personal favorite of 2020 as well, was John Steingard and Sean McDowell. Another worship leader loses his faith, was the title of that one. But what a great conversation they had. And it's been lovely, actually, to see the way that both John has made friends with Sean and with myself. In fact, I'm going to be appearing on John's new podcast himself as he explores sort of his own search for faith again. So he's on a very interesting journey, is John Steingard. And at number 1, the biggest, most popular show of 2020, perhaps unsurprisingly, was the final episode of our last big conversation series, which snuck into 2020 in January. Can Atheism Deliver a Better World? That was Matt Dillahunty and Glenn Scrivener. And yes, because it's been so popular on YouTube especially, that one won the day in terms of the popularity contest. But anyway, I wonder what your favourite episode was of last year and whether it was in that top 10. Thank you everyone who's been getting in touch as well with your suggestions for what you'd like to see in 2021. I always do this at the beginning of the year on social media, ask what would you like to see, who would you like to see on the show. So many suggestions, and I could never do all of them because there wouldn't be enough weeks in the year to do them all. But I saw, among many others, a number of requests for Michael Heiser, who's not been on the show yet but has been asked for many times. We are in conversation with Michael to try and get him on the show. There was some requests for Esau Macaulay. His new book, Reading While Black, has been out a little while. We're going to see if we can get Esau on. More Catholics and Orthodox were also suggested, and we'll see what we can do. I can tell you that we do have one of the best known Catholic communicators in the world today coming on the show for our new big conversation series later in the year, and that is Bishop Robert Barron, who has a very successful and influential YouTube channel, Word on Fire, and ministry. So and in a way, we did start off the year with a Catholic. Holly Ordway, on last week's show, is herself, of course, a Catholic, as was J.R.R. Tolkien, who was the subject of much of our discussion last week. We'll get to some of your thoughts on that in a moment's time. But before we do that, let's just give a little shout out to a few people who've been in touch over the Christmas and New Year period. This was lovely from Common Sense Epistemologist, tweeted me to say, annual reminder of how thankful I am for Unbelievable's radio show and podcast. You have changed a small but significant part of the world permanently by creating a treasure trove of some of the most interesting conversations ever had and will impact people for decades to come. What a lovely message to want to send me over the New Year period. Thank you very much. And Christian Chaos tweeted, Unbelievable has by far been the biggest influence in my whole doubting deconstruction phase, probably even more than any individual person I know. James Edgell very kindly said, I'm pastor for Rushmere Community Church in Suffolk. Love listening to the Unbelievable show for many years. Was hoping you could let me know if we are allowed to use any Unbelievable clip from YouTube for our online services. And the answer is, of course you are, James. Feel free. I love it when people go and use this for illustrative purposes and that kind of thing. Hope you you know, whatever your church meetings look like right now, and probably like ours, they're all online. I do hope that you get something interesting out of that. Here's a lovely email as well from Chris Stelos in Toronto, Canada, who says, "Hope you had a wonderful Christmas. I discovered Unbelievable about 3 years ago and purchased your book of the same title. I've been working through the podcast archives and love the thought-provoking and faith-challenging and reassuring conversations and material. I apologize if this has been asked before, but have there been any instances you know of with some of your atheist and agnostic guests in the past that have since converted to Christianity?" A good question. The one example that leaps to mind is Peter Byram, who's been on the show once or twice over the years, but came along to the show as very much as an atheist agnostic, but of course had quite the dramatic conversion, really, around 2011, when he got involved with the Reasonable Faith Tour that we were hosting at the time. And I think there are other examples. I just can't pull any straight out of my mind, and obviously don't keep tabs on everyone who does come through the show. But you go on to ask, "I've not seen any Eastern Orthodox Christians on your show yet. I'm wondering if you have any future plans to host any. As an Eastern Orthodox Christian myself, it would be nice to see some representation. Notable figures you might want to look into, you may already be familiar with, are Jonathan Padgew and Andrew Stephen Dammick. Cheers to a healthy, safe and blessed 2021. God bless you and the family." Yes, Jonathan Padgew. I hope I'm pronouncing the surname correctly. I've seen him referenced many times on my social media, and his name came up a few times as well among those who wanted to see new guests on the show. So, yes, we'll see what we can do as well on that front. Thank you very much for getting in touch. Freddie in Carlisle also emails to say, "I've been following Unbelievable since I became a Christian some years ago, and came across this writer in Christianity magazine who also hosted excellent podcasts exploring all sorts of apologetic conversations. I'm writing with a book recommendation that it might have been helpful if I could have got you before your conversation today on Scandinavia, but alas, I fear I may be too late. It's The Book That Transforms Nations by Lauren Cunningham from YWAM Publishing. It has an excellent chapter on Hans Nielsen Howe, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, that explains why Norway has the blessings it does and is as rich as it is. Hopefully this may be brought up in your conversation." Well, as you can probably tell, Freddie, it wasn't actually mentioned in our conversation, but that might be an interesting follow-up. The Book That Transforms Nations, the chapter on Hans Nielsen Ho, I think is the way I pronounce his surname. Thank you very much for all of those suggestions and those greetings as well. Here's one more on this front from James, and it's another Eastern Orthodox listener, interestingly, says, "I've been deeply nourished by many of the conversations you've hosted, deeply grateful for the work. I was raised in the Church of Christ in the United States, a fundamentalist evangelical tradition. I'm a convert to the Orthodox Church, and my patron saint is St. Gregory of Nyssa, the first canonized saint to postulate Christian universalism. I was re-listening to old episodes and came across one in which it was stated or suggested that universalism is a liberal Christian tradition. I just wanted to say, as my name day approaches, St. Gregory's feast day is January the 10th, that in fact, Christian universalism is a very old tradition, and while most Orthodox believe in the eternity of hell, it is in fact Calvinists like James White who believe in a modern notion of what the eternity of hell means. There's no scriptural basis, read Romans for goodness sake, for eternal conscious torment, and the desire to paint universalism as liberal fundamentally misunderstands the Christian tradition. It's no surprise that Westerners tend not to give much love or credence to the Orthodox East. Even so, I feel the need to write in and say that universalism as a tradition does not begin with George MacDonald, it begins with St. Paul, and is perfected in the work of my patron saint. Thank you very much, James, for getting in touch." And we had some lovely messages via Instagram as well. Firstly, Jim Thring's story struck a chord with a number of people. Jim Thring came on our Christmas Boxing Day edition of the show. Myself and Ruth Jackson interviewed Jim about his journey of deconstruction and reconstruction, coming back to faith after being an atheist for the best part of 10 years. Sam Wolf got in touch to say, "So good. Thank you so much. The episode really encouraged me to just be a patiently loving friend, praying from a distance and to remain present in the life of my friends who are currently deconstructing and only giving clear rational arguments for essentials of the Christian faith when needed." Also, Nivia, I think is the name of this person, got in touch to say, what a blessing the show is. It gave me the courage to start my master's in theology and start teaching apologetics at the Bible school I work at. I'm very much interested in the role of women in different settings, religious and a-religious, and inerrancy of the Bible. Many blessings. Wow. Nivea, goodness me, a master's in theology after listening to Unbelievable. Bless you all for getting in touch. It's been so good to hear the way the show has been reaching out in various ways. Just a couple of your thoughts on the J.R.R. Tolkien show. This was so interesting. I just really enjoyed sitting down with our guests for that, Michael and Holly, as we talked about Jesus and J.R.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, all that kind of thing. Actually made me go after that, go and pick up a copy of The Hobbit and read it again. I haven't read it in, well, years. I can't remember the last time I read it, really. And it's been great fun. It's just been my evening reading for the last week or so. Just enjoying a right rollicking story with The Hobbit. Anyway, Bruce Smallmighty tweeted me saying, I'd like to write a modern work of fantasy fiction, a story set against a backdrop of the Narnia-like half-life of Western secular humanism, contrasting with the dynamism and colour of full spiritual life. I love Lewis and Tolkien, so look forward to listening to this show. And Matt said, fascinating discussion on Tolkien. Have you considered another show with Philip Pullman discussing his latest trilogy, The Book of Dust? The religious element so far is less obvious than his Dark Materials, but is clearly there. A good conversation partner might be Grant McCaskill, Kirby Lang Chair of New Testament Exegesis at Aberdeen University. He wrote some interesting papers on his Dark Materials back in the day. Thanks, Matt. Interesting idea. Yes, it might be fun to get to get Philip Pullman back on again. He's always been a very generous, actually, discussion partner whenever we've had him on in the past. And of course, the Dark Materials trilogy has of course had a new lease of life with the recent TV adaptation as well, which we've been watching over the Christmas period as well. We had that Christmas debate, of course. That was going back before Christmas that we had two guests. Who was it now? Lydia McGrew and Jonathan Pierce, that was it. They were debating the historicity of the nativity story. Right rollicking debate that was. And we actually did, for the first time, a survey. We gave you the option of clicking through, taking survey. Hundreds of you did that. Thank you very much. And I should say from the outset, many more Christians responded than atheists to that. So, of course, that should absolutely be taken into account when it comes to the way the results came out. But the majority said they did think Lydia made the better case, and the majority believed that the birth narratives are historically reliable. Again, pretty much split down atheist Christian lines when you sort of, you know, look at the tallying. Happily, I'm glad to say the majority of both atheist, agnostic and Christian viewers and listeners say they would be happy to recommend Unbelievable to friends. So at least that was something they agreed on. Anyway, we may well be using this surveying tool again, especially when it comes to our big conversations later in the year. Glad to say that we're looking like from April, from Easter, really, we'll be starting with season 3 of the big conversation. Bit of a hiatus year in between due to a certain coronavirus pandemic, but glad to be bringing you some fresh shows, some really exciting guests we've got lined up for you on The Big Conversation. And just while we're talking about that show from Christmas, Colton got in touch as well over the Christmas period to say, I love the show. I've listened for about 7 years. I think that Jonathan Pierce really played fast and loose on the issue of the census. According to Dr. McGrew, of saying, if it's possible, therefore it's probable, he never responded to the fact that Lydia McGrew gave textual evidence that Luke knows of two different censi. More importantly, it is Mr. Pierce who claims, and therefore has the burden of proof to demonstrate, that Matthew and Luke contradict each other. That claim is undercut by the possibility that Luke is thinking of another census. So even if we don't have a ton of independent evidence that Luke is referring to another census, we at least don't have any strong reason to think Luke contradicts Matthew on this point. I think it was bad form of Mr. Pierce to shift the burden of proof when he was the one claiming a contradiction. Thank you, Colton. Thanks to all of those who've been in touch with other issues as well. But that'll probably do us for now. It's been great to see some of the interactions that have happened on the shows over the Christmas and New Year period. We've got some really good stuff coming up for you in coming weeks as well. Got an interesting conversation with an ex-Christian coming up, Sam, who runs a blog and a podcast of his own on that front. We're going to be doing another sort of Bible debate, looking at the bits of the Bible that we sometimes get embarrassed by. Dan Kimball has a new book out on that. Again, it's How Not to Read the Bible. That's what it's called. And he'll be coming on. But next week, we have a very important discussion coming up. Let me tell you about it right now. Is the American church in the grip of political idolatry in light of last week's dramatic events at Capitol Hill? We'll be asking that question with some special guests. We're still pulling this one together, so I won't tell you exactly who we may or may not have at this point. But do come back same time next week for more from the show that aims to bring you conversations that matter. For now, thanks for being with me.